This is the radio broadcast of The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Part 1.
Inspector Newcomen of Scotland Yard. We've just concluded our interview with Dr. Jekyll's lawyer, Mr. Utterson. Mr. Utterson here has provided a detailed statement regarding the events at Dr. Jekyll's house last night. Save your questions, and believe me, you'll have some, until you've heard everything. But first, the layout of Dr. Jekyll's property. You can enter it two ways, through the front door which faces the square, or through a back door in the by street which runs behind the property. If you enter through the front door and go down past the kitchen offices and across the backyard, you'll come to the laboratory building. Most of this building is taken up by the laboratory, but at the far end there's a staircase which leads to the door of Dr. Jekyll's cabinet. The cabinet is a large furnished room fitted round with glass presses. And finally, there's a corridor which joins the laboratory building to the door on the by street. So, now to Mr. Utterson's statement. Mr. Utterson, sir, if you would please explain the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I'm Gabriel John Utterson, lawyer and friend of Dr. Henry Jekyll. In my business room at my bachelor house there is a safe, and in the most private part of that safe there once lay Dr. Jekyll's will. This document was my eyesore. It offended me both as a lawyer and as a lover of the sane and customary sides of life. You see, the will provided that in the case of Dr. Jekyll's decease, all his possessions were to pass into the hands of his friend and benefactor, Edward Hyde. But also, in the case of Dr. Jekyll's disappearance or unexplained absence for any period exceeding 3 calendar months, the said Edward Hyde should step into the said Henry Jekyll's shoes without delay. When the will had first been made, I was ignorant of Mr. Hyde. I had never met him and knew nothing of him. Then shortly after, I was on a walk with my cousin, Mr. Richard Enfield, and it so chanced that our way led us down the by street behind Dr. Jekyll's house, where, of course, we passed the door that provided the back way to the property. Now, to an ordinary passerby, it's hard to tell exactly where the door leads, and the fact that the door led to Dr. Jekyll's house was clearly unknown to my companion, for if he had known, discretion would have prevented Mr. Enfield from recounting the following story to me.
Utterson, do you see that door? It is connected in my mind with a very odd story. I am coming home late one night, the streets as empty as a church. All at once I see two figures, one a little man stumping along at a good walk, and the other a girl of maybe 8 or 10 running as hard as she is able down a cross street. Well, sir, the two run into one another at the corner. And then comes the horrible part, for the man tramples calmly over the child's body and leaves her screaming on the ground. It sounds like nothing to hear, but it was hellish to see. Well, I instantly take to my heels, collar the gentleman, and bring him back to where there is already quite a group about the screaming child. He is perfectly cool and makes no resistance,
but gives me one look so ugly, it brings out the sweat on me like running. The people who've turned out are the girl's own family, and pretty soon the doctor, for whom the girl was sent in the first place, puts in his appearance. Well, the child is not much the worse, more frightened, according to the doctor, and there you might suppose would be an end to it. But there is one curious circumstance. I have taken a loathing to my prisoner at first sight, so has the child's family, which is only natural. But the doctor's case is what strikes me. He is the usual cut-and-dry apothecary, of no particular age and colour, strong Edinburgh accent, emotional as a bagpipe. Well, sir, he is like the rest of us. Every time he looks at my prisoner, I see that he turns sick and white with a desire to kill him. Well, killing being out of the question, we do the next best. We tell the man we can and will make such a scandal out of this as should make his name stink from one end of London to the other. And all the time we're keeping the women off him as best we can, for they're as wild as harpies. But there is the man in the middle, with a kind of black, sneering coolness. Frightened too, I can see that, but carrying it off like Satan. If you choose to make capital out of this accident, says he, I am naturally helpless. No gentleman but wishes to avoid a scene, says he. Name your figure. Well, we screw him up to £100 for the child's family. The next thing, of course, is to get the money. And where do you think he leads us but to that door? He whips out a key, goes in, and comes back with £10 in gold, but also, and here comes another shocking part of the story, he returns with another man's cheque for £90 drawn payable to the bearer. The man whose name appeared on the cheque I can't mention, but it was a man very well known and often printed. I can see you feel as I do, Utterson. It is indeed a bad story. My prisoner was a really damnable man, but the person who wrote that cheque for him is the very pink of proprieties, celebrated too. Blackmail, I suppose. An honest man paying through the nose for some of the capers of his youth. Blackmail House is what I call that place with the door. And Enfield, you've never asked the writer of the cheque about that night? No, sir. I make it a rule of mine. The more it looks like Queer Street, the less I ask. Enfield, would you tell me, what was the name of the man who walked over the child? Well, I can't see what harm it would do. It was a man by the name of Hyde. Hyde, you say? What sort of man is he to see? He is not easy to describe. There is something wrong with his appearance, something downright detestable. I never saw a man I so disliked, and yet I scarce know why. No, sir, I can't describe him, and it's not want of memory, for I can see him this very moment. Are you sure this Mr. Hyde used a key? It's very important. I know it must seem strange my asking, but the fact is, if I do not ask you the name of the writer of the cheque, it is because I know it already. If you have been inexact in any point, you had better correct it. I think you might have warned me, Utterson. But I have been pedantically exact. The fellow had a key. But I am ashamed of my long tongue. Let us make a bargain never to refer to this again. That evening I returned home in somber spirits. I opened my safe and took from it Dr. Jekyll's will. In the case of Dr. Jekyll's disappearance or unexplained absence for any period exceeding 3 calendar months, the said Edward Hyde should step into the said Henry Jekyll's shoes without delay. I had thought it was madness, but now I began to fear it was disgrace. I set forth in the direction of Cavendish Square, where my friend the great Dr. Lanyon had his house and received his patients. If anyone knew, it would be Lanyon, I thought. I suppose, Lanyon, you and I must be the two oldest friends that Henry Jekyll has.
I suppose we are, and what of that?
I see little of him now.
Indeed, but you're both men of medicine. You have a bond of common interest.
We have.
But it is more than 10 years since Henry Jekyll became too fanciful for me. He began to go wrong in my mind, involved in such unscientific balderdash. But though, of course, I continue to take an interest in him for old sake, as they say, I see and have seen devilish little of the man.
Did you ever come across a protege of his? One Hyde?
Hyde? No. I never heard of him.
That was the amount of information I carried back with me to my bed. As I lay in the darkness, my imagination was fully engaged. I can see it now. Mr. Enfield's tale passing before my mind in a scroll of lighted pictures. The figure of the man walking swiftly, the child running from the doctors, the two meeting, and that human juggernaut trampling the child down and passing on regardless of her scream. And now a room in a rich house where my friend Dr. Jekyll lies asleep, dreaming and smiling at his dreams. And then the door is opened, the curtains of the bed plucked apart, the sleeper recalled, and lo, there by his side stands the figure of that man to whom power is given, and even at this dead hour, Dr. Jekyll must rise and do its bidding. The figure of that man in these two phases haunted me all night, and if at any time I dozed over, it was but to see the figure glide more stealthily through sleeping houses, or move the more swiftly, and still the more swiftly, even to dizziness, through wider labyrinths of the city, and at every street corner crush a child and leave her screaming. And still the figure had no face by which I might know it. And thus there sprang up and grew apace in my mind a singularly strong, almost an inordinate curiosity to behold the features of the real Mr. Hyde, Henry Jekyll's favourite, heir to a quarter of a million sterling. And so I begin to haunt the door in the by street. In the morning before office hours, at noon when business is plenty and time scarce, and at night, by all lights and at all hours of solitude or concourse, I am to be found at my post. If he be Mr. Hyde, I think, I shall be Mr. Seek. At length my patience is rewarded. It's a fine, dry night, and by 10 o'clock, when the shops are closed, the street is solitary and silent. I have been some minutes at my post when I am aware of odd, light footsteps drawing near. From my place of concealment, I can see what manner of man I have to deal with. He is small and very plainly dressed, and the look of him, even at this distance, goes somehow strongly against my inclination. But he makes straight for the door, and as he does so, draws a key from his pocket. I step out and touch him on the shoulder. Mr. Hyde, I think.
That is my name. What do you want?
I see you are going in. I am an old friend of Dr. Jekyll's, Mr. Utterson of Gaunt Street. You must have heard my name, and meeting you so conveniently, I thought you might admit me.
You will not find Dr. Jekyll. He is from home.
I see. Well, I am glad we have met. Now at least I shall know you again. It may be useful.
Yes, as you say, it is as well we have met. And, apropos, you should have my address card.
Take it!
Now, how did you know me?
By description.
Whose description?
We have common friends.
Common friends? Who are they?
Jekyll, for instance.
He never told you. I did not think you would have lied.
And then, with extraordinary quickness, he unlocks the door and disappears into the house. The address he had given me was in Soho. He had been very willing to give it. And I wondered if he, too, could have been thinking of the will. But what to make of him? How was I to explain the hitherto unknown disgust, loathing, and fear with which I regarded him? God bless me, the man seemed hardly human. It was as if the radiance of a foul soul transpired through him. That was it, I thought. For if I had ever read Satan's signature upon a face, it was on that of Henry Jekyll's new friend. I round the corner of the by-street, make my way to the square, and head for Dr. Jekyll's front door. I stop and knock, and a few moments later, Poole, Dr. Jekyll's butler, opens the door. Good evening, Poole. Is Dr. Jekyll at home?
I'm afraid he's gone out, sir.
I saw Mr. Hyde go in the back way by the laboratory door, Poole. Is that right when Dr. Jekyll is from home?
Quite right, Mr. Atterson, sir. Mr. Hyde has a key.
Your master seems to place a great deal of trust in that young man, Poole.
Yes, sir, he do indeed. We have all orders to obey him. But we see very little of him on this side of the house. He mostly comes and goes by the laboratory.
And so I set homeward with a very heavy heart. I could only perceive that my poor friend was in deep waters. Jekyll had been wild when he was young. I assumed it must be that. The ghost of some old sin, some concealed disgrace, years after memory has forgotten and self-love condoned the fault. But then, with a spark of hope, I conceive that this Master Hyde, if he was studied, must have secrets of his own. Dark secrets by the look of him. Secrets to which poor Jekyll's worst would be like sunshine. Things could not continue as they were. For oh, the danger of it! If this Hyde suspected the existence of the will, he might grow impatient to inherit. I decided I must put my shoulder to the wheel. If Jekyll would but let me, if he would only let me. A fortnight later, by excellent good fortune, Dr. Jekyll gave a pleasant dinner to some five or six old friends, all reputable men, and all judges of good wine. And I contrived to remain behind after the others had departed. Jekyll, I have been wanting to speak to you. You know that will of yours.
My poor Utterson, you are unfortunate in such a client, are you not? I never saw a man so distressed as you were by my will, unless it were that hidebound pedant Lanyon and what he called my scientific heresies. Oh, I know he's a good fellow. You needn't frown. An excellent fellow, and I always mean to see more of him. But a hidebound pedant for all that. An ignorant, blatant pedant. I was never more disappointed in any man than Lanyon.
You know I never approved of it.
My will? Yes, certainly, I know that. You have told me so.
Well, I tell you so again. I have been learning something of Mr. Hyde.
I do not care to hear more, Utterson. This is a matter I thought we had agreed to drop. What I heard was abominable. It can make no change. You do not understand my position. It's a very strange one. It is one of those affairs that cannot be mended by talking.
Jekyll, you know me. I am a man to be trusted. Make a clean breast of this in confidence, and I make no doubt I can get you out of it.
My dear Utterson, this is very good of you, and I cannot find the words to thank you. I would trust you before any man alive. But indeed, it isn't what you fancy. It is not so bad as that. And just to put your good heart at rest, I will tell you one thing. The moment I choose, I can be rid of Mr. Hyde. I give you my hand upon that.
But I will just add one little word, Utterson, that I'm sure you'll take in good part. This is a private matter, and I beg you to let it sleep. However, I should like you to understand that I have really a very great interest in poor Hyde. I know you've seen him, he told me so, and I fear he was rude, but I do sincerely take a very great interest in that young man. And if I'm taken away, Utterson, I wish you to promise me that you will bear with him and get his rights for him. I can't pretend I shall ever like him. I don't ask that. I only ask you to help him for my sake. If I am no longer here. As time passed, apart from the occasions when I saw the will in the safe and was thus reminded of my fears for Dr. Jekyll, I tried to put Mr. Hyde completely out of my mind. But in October, nearly a year later, London was startled by a crime of singular ferocity and rendered all the more notable by the high position of the victim. I speak, of course, of the brutal murder of my former client, Sir Danvers Carew.
Thank you, Mr. Utterson. I'll take it from here.
Yes, of course, Inspector.
Let me remind you all of the details pertaining to the Carew murder case. The murder is witnessed by a maid servant. She's gone upstairs to bed about 11, and her window overlooks a lane, which on this particular night is lit by the full moon. It seems she is romantically given because she sits down at her window and falls into a dream of music. And as she so sits, she becomes aware of an aged gentleman with white hair, Sir Danvers Carew, although she doesn't know him at the time, drawing near along the lane, and also walking towards him another and very small gentleman. Sir Danvers bows and speaks to the other, it seems to the maid that he is asking his way. She then looks at the other man and recognises him as a Mr. Hyde, who had once visited her master and for whom she had conceived a dislike. This Mr. Hyde is holding a heavy cane and seems to be listening to the old man with growing impatience. Then all of a sudden, and I quote, Mr. Hyde breaks out in a great flame of anger and like a madman clubs Sir Danvers to the ground. He then tramples his victim underfoot with ape-like fury and hails down a storm of blows under which the old man's bones are audibly shattered. The maid then faints. When she comes to around 2 o'clock and calls for the police, the murderer is long gone. His victim, however, is still there, lying in the middle of the lane in a mangled heap. Mr. Hyde's stick, despite being of an extremely tough and heavy wood, has broken in the middle under the stress of the battering. One of the splintered halves has rolled into the gutter. The other, we are to discover later, has been carried away by the murderer. A purse and gold watch are found upon the victim, together with a sealed and stamped envelope, which he had probably been carrying to the post, and which bears the name and address of Mr. Utterson. Mr. Utterson later identifies Sir Danvers Carew, and recognises the stick as being one he had given to Dr. Jekyll as a gift many years before. He tells us of Jekyll's close association with Mr. Hyde. Mr. Utterson then takes us to Hyde's address in Soho. Hyde's housekeeper shows us his rooms, which are furnished with luxury and good taste, but which, when we arrive, have been recently and hurriedly ransacked. Clothes lie about the floor with their pockets inside out. Drawers stand open. And on the hearth there is a pile of grey ashes, as though many papers have been burned. From these embers, I disinter the butt end of a green checkbook, which has resisted the action of the fire. The other half of the stick is found behind the door. We visit the bank and find several thousand pounds lying to the murderer's credit. He's clearly lost his head, or he would never leave the stick, or above all, the burned checkbook. Well, money being life to the man, it seems that all we might need to do is to wait for him at the bank. But this doesn't come about. In fact, Mr. Hyde had numbered few familiars. His landlady said that before the night of the murder, she hadn't seen him for nearly 2 months. The master of the servant maid had only seen Mr. Hyde twice. His family couldn't be traced. He had never been photographed. And a few people who could describe him differed widely, as common observers will. However, they all reported how Mr. Hyde had aroused in them the utmost feelings of hatred, revulsion, and dread. But where had he gone? Much of his past was unearthed. Tales came out of the man's vile, sinful life. His cruelty, his strange associations, and how can I put it? His carnal proclivities. But of his whereabouts, not a whisper. From the time he left the house in Soho on the morning of the murder, he was simply blotted out. Right, back to your statement, Mr. Atterson, sir, if you would be so kind.
The day following the murder of Sir Danvers Carew, it is late in the afternoon when I find my way to Dr. Jekyll's house. My friend is standing by the fire looking deadly sick.
Well, Jekyll, have you heard the news about Sir Danvers?
They were crying it in the square. I heard them in my dining room.
Carew was my client, but so are you, and I want to know what I am doing. You have not been mad enough to hide this, Mr. Hyde.
Utterson, I swear to God. I swear to God I will never set eyes on him again. I bind my honour to you that I am done with him in this world. It is all at an end. And indeed, he does not want my help. You do not know him as I do. He is gone, Utterson. He is gone. Mark my words, he will never more be heard of.
You seem pretty sure of him. And for your sake, I hope you may be right. If it came to a trial, your name might appear.
I am quite sure of him. I have grounds for certainty that I cannot share with anyone.
Very well. And now one word more. It was Hyde who dictated the terms in your will.
I knew it. He meant to murder you, I'm sure. You have had a fine escape. I've had what is far more to the purpose. I have had a lesson. Oh God, Utterson, what a lesson I have had!
As time ran on, and no trace of Mr. Hyde was ever found, I began to recover from the hotness of my alarm and to grow more at quiet with myself. The death of Sir Danvers was, to my way of thinking, more than paid for by the disappearance of Mr. Hyde. Now that that evil influence had been withdrawn, a new life began for Dr. Jekyll. He came out of his seclusion, renewed relations with his friends, became once more their familiar guest and entertainer. He was busy, he did good, his face seemed to open and brighten, and for more than 2 months the doctor was at peace. On the 8th of January, I dined at the doctor's with a small party. Lanyon was there too, and the face of Jekyll looked from one to the other as in the old days when we were inseparable friends. But on the 12th, and again on the 14th, the door was shut against me. The doctor was confined to the house, Poole said, and saw no one. On the 15th, I tried again and was again refused, and having now been used for the last 2 months to see my friend almost daily, I found this return of solitude to weigh upon my spirits. On the fifth night, I betake myself to Dr. Lanyon's. But when I enter, I am shocked at the change which has taken place in Lanyon's appearance. He has his death warrant written legibly upon his face. The rosy man has grown pale. He is visibly older. And there is a look in his eye and a quality in his manner that testify to some deep-seated terror of the mind. I have had a shock, Utterson. And I shall never recover. Well, life has been pleasant. I liked it. Yes, sir, I used to like it. I sometimes think if we knew all, we should be more glad to get away.
Jekyll is ill too, it seems. Have you seen him?
I wish to see or hear no more of Dr. Jekyll. I beg that you will spare me any allusion to one whom I regard as dead. My dear Lanyon, can't I do anything? We are three very old friends. We shall not live to make others. Some day, Utterson, after I am gone, you may perhaps come to learn the right and wrong of this. I cannot tell you. And in the meantime, if you can sit and talk with me of other things, stay and do so. But if you cannot keep clear of this accursed topic, then in God's name go, for I cannot bear it.
A few days later, my friend takes to his bed, and in something less than a fortnight, he is dead. I am at a loss to explain his swift decline, until that is last night. I am standing by my fireside after dinner when I am surprised to receive a visit from Poole.
Mr. Utterson, there's something wrong. You know the doctor's way, sir, and how he shuts himself up. Well, he's shut up again in the cabinet, and I don't like it, Mr. Utterson, sir, I'm afraid.
Now, my good man, take your time. What are you afraid of?
I've been afraid for about a week, and I can bear it no more. I can bear it no more. I think there's been foul play. Please, sir, will you come with me and see for yourself?
It is wild and cold outside. When Poole and I reach the square, it is all full of wind and dust, and the thin trees in the garden are lashing themselves along the railing. The hall, when we enter it, is brightly lighted up. The fire is built high, and about the hearth, the whole of the servants, men and women, stand huddled together like a flock of sheep. At the sight of me, the housemaid breaks into hysterical whimpering, and the cook cries out, "Bless God, it's Mr. Utterson," and runs forward as if to take me in her arms. Poole tells her to hold her tongue with a ferocity that testifies to his own jangled nerves. We take up lanterns, and he begs me to follow him as he leads the way across the back garden, into the laboratory building, and finally up the staircase to the door of the cabinet.
"Now, sir, be as gentle as you can. I want you to hear, but I don't want you to be heard. Listen, sir. He is moving about. So he will walk all day, sir, aye, and the better part of the night. But hark again, a little closer. Put your heart in your ears, Mr. Utterson, and tell me, is that the doctor's walk?"
"It seems much changed."
"Changed? Well, yes, I think so. Have I been 20 years in this man's house to be deceived about his walk? No, sir. My master's made away with. And who's in there instead of him, Mr. Utterson? And why does it stay there?"
So that was part one of the Abbey Theatre's version of The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's really, really true to the text, so it's a bit, actually probably a bit better for you to listen to than the chapter-by-chapter sound bites that I uploaded a while ago. I hope you enjoy. Part two will be coming soon. Thank you.